Welcome back to Now Showing. I'm Patty Holly. History comes to life during the upcoming Voices of the Past interpretive tours presented by the St. Joseph Museum. Public Relations Officer for the St. Joseph Museum, Kathy Reno, says the tours are a popular event.
Voices from the Past are our interpretive tours of Mount Morris Cemetery that we do on the Thursday and Friday before Halloween each year. It's characters in costume. It's living history. Very famous and influential, and people that played a role in St. Joseph's history and the history of the area, sometimes the nation and the world, are buried in Mount Morris Cemetery. Mount Morris is one of the oldest cemeteries around. They come and tell you the story of their lives on a tour. What was important about their life? What did they do? What did they contribute? Did they fight in the Civil War, perhaps? Were they a Pony Express rider? And then they will explain the cause of their demise.
Now, people who have gone on this before, will they be seeing the same people, hearing the same stories?
No. Every year, there's a different theme. And because Mount Morris is so huge, we could tell stories for decades into the future and not repeat any of them. Also, what's beautiful about Mount Morris, it's done in the old winding park-like style. The architecture is magnificent. The mausoleums are quite unique. And so we usually start our tours up along what's known as Mausoleum Row in what the newspapers of the day called the prettiest city of the dead. It's just beautiful in the fall.
Who does the research on these people, and how do they go about deciding who to have as characters during the tour and what information to share?
We're very fortunate to have Suzanne Lear from the Mount Morris Cemetery Preservation and Restoration Association, and she works on the scripts. And this year, the theme will be people with connections to America's tragic Civil War. They're going to begin with a strange young man with an even stranger tale. And then they'll meet a child whose three older brothers died in the conflict. And, of course, they'll talk about the unique historical figure who spent 6 months in Mount Morris before he was removed and buried somewhere else. So we know some little tidbits, but she's very good about keeping the major stories to herself. But she'll tell things about how St. Joseph was connected to Atchison, Kansas. A young widow will describe the war years without her husband. What was life like in St. Joseph when he was gone? And one of the bravest men General Sterling Price ever met, they'll talk about him and how he engages with a military man of contemporary times. And was one of St. Joseph's Union generals a truly brutal man? His wife will tell you that particular story. And then there will be what it was like to be transported to the auction block in another time by a slave. A former slave will say what that had been like in her childhood. So this is a chance for history to come alive, and you'll get a mix this year of ordinary people who were living their lives during the Civil War era and, of course, Civil War soldiers.
Who play the characters?
You know, they're all over, all types of people. In this case, one of the young daughters is a 12-year-old actress, and she's really very good. She's one that I have seen in her costume and the part of the story that she's willing to share at this point. We call on local residents. Now, many of them have a family tie. I've seen people who are portraying their great-great grandmother or grandfather. So it might be a family member, or it might just be someone with a real passion for that particular story.
That was Public Relations Officer for the St. Joseph Museum, Kathy Reno. The Voices of the Past tours will be next Thursday and Friday, with two tours each night, one at 6:30 and one at 7:30. Tours begin at the Wyeth Tootle Mansion at 1100 Charles Street in downtown St. Joseph. Ticket information for the tours is available by calling the museum at 800-530-8866. The Roubidoux Resident Theater in St. Joseph is bringing a popular musical to the stage this weekend. RRT Executive Director Jeff Haney says Cabaret opened on Broadway in 1968.
And then, of course, the 1972 movie won 8 Oscars with Liza Minnelli in the starring role. And then in 98, it was on Broadway again and ran for about 10 years as a revival. And so it is a musical that is set in 1931 in Berlin, Germany, and it is about the rise of the Nazi Party. And to counter that is there's a lot of activity in the cabaret in which you meet people, but they are metaphors for what was happening in that time in history as far as the Nazi Party.
Are there some songs that people may recognize in this production?
Oh, yes. They're certainly going to recognize the title song, Cabaret. They're going to recognize the Money song. They're going to recognize Maybe This Time and Mine Air. These are just kind of classic songs. People that are involved in theater or familiar with musicals at all are very familiar with.
Now, this is part of the Roubidoux Resident Theater's Main Stage series. What is the Main Stage series?
The Main Stage series is really the series that we have been doing now for 32 years. It is the series at the Missouri Theater. It consists of 5 shows, musicals, dramas, and comedies, and it runs all the way from October through July of the following year. And so we have 5 different productions that make up our main stage.
And these are professional organizations that come in to produce these?
No, these are all our local people, and so the professionals are going to be involved with the orchestra, and so we bring in a professional orchestra, and then beyond that, our actors and our dancers are all going to be local performers.
How many performers do you have for Cabaret?
We have 23 actors on stage.
How does that compare to other productions?
It's a fairly small cast. When we look at a piece like Fiddler or a piece like Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, there's anywhere between 55 and 60 people on those huge musicals. But this is much more of an intimate musical, and so there's not a huge chorus in the show. It's mostly the main characters or the second leads that are, you know, fulfilling the cast.
It sounds like this series and this musical are great ways to see the local talent in the area.
Oh, absolutely. And we're blessed with many, many local people that are incredibly talented. And some have been with us for years, and some are brand new for us. They come far away as Rockport, and so you have people driving, you know, all the way from Rockport every night to just to rehearse for 8 weeks. And so we include the entire Northwest region of the state.
That was Executive Director of the Roubidoux Resident Theater, Jeff Haney. He says Cabaret will be at the Missouri Theater tomorrow and Saturday nights at 7:30, with a matinee performance Sunday at 2 o'clock. Ticket information is available at Roubidoux Resident Theater's website at rrtstjoe.org or at the door. St. Joseph Community Chorus will hold its first concert of its 31st season on Sunday. The artistic director for the chorus is Dr. David Benz. He says this concert will feature the spiritual works of Norman Luboff.
This concert kind of has a focus to it. I didn't really plan this, but it's American music by composers named Norman. And I thought, after I looked at the music that I selected, it was funny that the main composers were named Norman in it. Norman Della Gioia and Norman Luboff. And the Norman Della Gioia songs, we're doing 3 of his songs. And a jubilant song, text by Walt Whitman. He was just an amazing concert pianist. So fortunately, we have a great pianist who can play his music as well. And then the second Norman is Norman Luboff. And Norman was, he was one of those composers that was called by Hollywood. And, he wrote for many television shows, and he scored over 80 films for music scores. And, of course, the Norman Luboff Choir, the main group that he worked with and toured for about 30 years, that group recorded over 75 albums. But we're doing some of his spirituals on this concert. And, you know, you can hear his work in Hollywood in this music. It's very interesting and very entertaining. You know, I talked about Norman Luboff and Norman Della Gioia, but there's a wonderful other set of songs. The Bells at Spire, which, of course, is a beautiful song where the voices are imitating bells from the cathedral in Spire, Germany. And one of Mozart's favorite songs, Laudate Dominus, by out of his Solemn Vespers. And Jennifer White, soprano soloist, is going to be our guest that day to sing that work. And then we also are doing, by John Rutter, one of my favorite settings of the 23rd Psalm, his song, The Lord is My Shepherd, which has beautiful oboe to it. And we have our guest oboist that day, Teresa Miller from Kansas, and a wonderful oboist. And we're also doing a set of songs by Cecil Effinger called Four Pastorals. And Cecil Effinger was one of Colorado's most important composers. And he was also an oboist. And so this work, the Four Pastorals, I think is the finest work written for a cappella choir and oboe. So we're really enjoying singing that.
Can you tell me a little bit about the makeup of the community chorus? Who are the people who are part of this?
Well, it's a very large group. Actually, it is the largest all-volunteer performing organization here in Northwest Missouri. About 85 singers who are community members here in the St. Joseph region, some from Cameron, some from North Kansas City, some from Hiawatha, Kansas. And so it is mostly people who are just normal, everyday people, but there's also quite a number of music leaders in the organization, music teachers and pianists and organists and very well-trained people. Many of them sing in their church choirs, so they're provide a lot of leadership in their churches as well.
You mentioned this is the 31st season. That seems like an awful long time for a volunteer organization to stick together and keep doing this type of thing.
It had wonderful leadership. It was founded by Frank Thomas, who was director of choral activities at Missouri Western State University. And of course, that is still where the organization meets every Monday night at 7:30. And we welcome new members at the beginning of each semester, and while we always have new members come in and join us, there's a wonderful nucleus of singers who have just been committed to this for 31 years now. So it's really amazing, their commitment and their working together for that long. You're right.
That was Artistic Director of the St. Joseph Community Chorus, Dr. David Benz. He says this weekend's performance will be Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at Fulkerson Hall on the campus of Missouri Western State University in St. Joseph. Ticket information is available on their website, stjoechorus.org. Tickets are also available at the door.
Beware the Ides of March, quoth the old seer in the bard's play of Julius Caesar. And on that day, in the middle of March, so long ago, a group of Roman senators made a political statement by stabbing Caesar 23 times. Well, here's a movie that uses that line in its title to make another sort of political statement, though it's one that doesn't involve assassination. Rather, the film The Ides of March is a commentary on the corruption of idealism when it comes in contact with the seamy reality of American politics. I'd say that the film's release is opportune, for the season of politics is upon us, but in recent times, it's always the scene of politics. Stephen Meyer, Ryan Gosling here, is a starry-eyed idealist, a high-level operative in the presidential campaign of Governor Mike Morris, played by George Clooney. Stephen's immediate boss is campaign manager Paul Zara, a seasoned and cynical veteran of the political wars. His opposite number is Tom Duffy, manager of the Arkansas Senator, Tom Pullman. They're campaigning in Ohio, and whoever gets that state's primary votes will have the nomination sewed up. For the campaign managers, it's just a job. Senator Morris defends all the virtuous positions: increased taxes for the wealthy, elimination of corporate tax breaks, reform of banks, phasing out the internal combustion engine within 10 years, you know, mostly liberal positions. And Morris seems like a straight arrow guy, one you might even vote for, until you see the cracks in his armor. Young Stevens says of Morris, he's the only one that can make a difference. We have to win. But reporter Ida Horowitz, a political columnist not above a little blackmail to get a story, is the equivalent of the soothsayer in Julius Caesar telling Stephen, Mike Morris is a politician. He'll let you down sooner or later. And so it goes. Stephen begins an affair with Molly Stearns, a 20-year-old intern in the Morris campaign. Maybe not a good choice, especially since she's the daughter of the Democratic Party national chairman. And he makes other unwise choices as he sees that candidate Morris, the man he's put on a pedestal, has feet of clay, somewhat in the manner of President Kennedy and Clinton's bad choices. Bit by bit, Stephen sells out his high principles and becomes just another power-hungry politico. A criticism of the film might be that Stephen loses his innocence rather easily. Not much resistance to bad choices here, and a bit more agonizing over them from the character would be better drama. The Ides of March is certainly a political film in the tradition of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. But while it valorizes candidate Morris's political views, it at the same time shows that the desire for power has left him morally challenged as everyone else, except the naive Molly, whose life is wrecked by the power trips of the men in her life. The film boasts some of Hollywood's best talents. Ryan Gosling is on a roll with an Oscar-worthy performance in Drive, also on the screen right now. Who knew George Clooney was so much more than just another pretty face with his sad eyes and whiskey nicotine voice? But he directed this fine film and also co-wrote the script, which is based on a play by Beau Willimon, by the way. Philip Seymour Hoffman as Paul Zora and Paul Giamatti as Tom Duffy are two of Hollywood's top dramatic talents. Evan Rachel Wood is excellent as the vulnerable Molly. The Ides of March is a serious dramatic film, and I thought it might tank at the box office because it has no monsters, explosions, or chase scenes, sort of stuff that sells tickets. But it's encouraging to see that it's holding its own, perhaps because of its star-studded cast. I'm giving it 4 stars out of 5.
That was KXCD KRNW movie reviewer Dr. Carol Fry. You can find information and links to the events and organizations you hear about on Now Showing on the KXCV KRNW website, kxcv.org. You can also listen to archived editions of the program by clicking on the Now Showing link on our homepage. Please join us again next Thursday for another edition of Now Showing. In the meantime, have a great weekend. For KXCV KRNW, I'm Patty Hawley.